What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast, ready for the finals. Coming up, as Sunderland and Sheffield United square off, we'll hear from the man behind the mic for Saturday's showpiece. There's a League One derby for a place in the Championship, and the League Two final is brought to you by the letter W, as Walsall and Wimbledon wander down Wembley Way. Powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL, and this is our penultimate show of the season. Thank you very much for joining us for it. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I am joined today, as ever, by my two podcasting pals. Hello, Adrian Clark.
Hello, Matthew. You're right.
Yeah, very well, thanks. The sun's shining. Wembley awaits for six of our teams this weekend. What could be finer? Sam Parkin's back with us too. How are you doing, Sam?
Very good. Good to see you both. Excited. Excitement at fever pitch. Cannot wait for the weekend.
I've seen you two both in real life across the space of 48 hours this weekend. It's quite unnerving, very unusual that we actually get to do that. So it was a nice way to spend the weekend. All right, before we get going, let me remind you, our partners Quinbet have an offer for you. You can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £35, minimum three bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quinn Casino. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gambleaware.org for information on responsible gambling. All right, these three playoff finals then, they're all kicking off at 1 minute past the hour to raise awareness of the Every Minute Matters campaign. This is designed to spotlight the collaboration between Sky Bet, the EFL sponsor, and the British Heart Foundation, which highlights the importance of learning CPR. You'll remember, listener, that in the 2023 Championship playoff final, Luton captain Tom Lockyer collapsed just 8 minutes into their game against Coventry, which the Hatters went on to win on penalties. Also of note, all three finals will use VAR and semi-automated offside technology. And we are going to start by looking ahead to the Championship showpiece. So it is Sheffield United versus Sunderland in the Championship playoff final on Saturday. Daniel Mann will have the call for Sky Sports here in the UK, and I'm chuffed to say he joins us now. Dan, very much not your first playoff rodeo, but how are you feeling ahead of Saturday's game? You probably still get the odd butterflies, right, ahead of any outing at Wembley?
Is there a game on? Yes, of course. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little bit different with a Wembley occasion. There's a multiple range of factors that make it a bit more challenging. So yeah, you have the high stakes of the occasion, the high stakes if you make a famous mistake, and also just when there's something about Wembley, and you know, it's a great venue, but it's also incredibly challenging to work there because everything is so amped up to 11. It's so loud, you can barely have a conversation with the person next to you while things are going on. So there's all sorts of things that are in your mind ahead of a game like this. So I suppose it's a bit like those who, not to the same degree, obviously, but those who are going to walk out onto the pitch, you're kind of hoping to get your first touch in and it's solid and there's no stumbles or issues. And then hopefully just relax into the game and play as you normally would. But yeah, it's a bit different. It's a bit different, obviously, to week to week.
And in terms of your prep for this game, at this stage of the season, do you find it a little bit easier? I know it's obviously the magnitude of the game is extreme and it's not just your sort of run-of-the-mill Tuesday night in the Championship, but you'll have seen both sides loads already this season, right? So that must help a little bit.
Of course, yeah. I mean, it helps with that familiarity. It helps that you're not likely to be sort of working things out as you go along. You've got pretty much instant recognition of most people. So yeah, of course it helps, but I suppose with a final, you're looking for different things. You're looking for things you haven't maybe looked at before. You're looking at sort of deeper stuff about maybe what they've done at Wembley or what their experience of Wembley might be. I mean, I remember uncovering, I didn't actually say it in the end, which I was kicking myself, but a few years ago, Dwayne Holmes played in it for Huddersfield in the Championship final. And I discovered that Every source was saying it was his first Wembley appearance, and I discovered that he played. I found this newspaper report, which I just typed his name into a newspaper search engine and Wembley, and came up with this report of an under-11s rugby league final, and it had the name Dwayne Holmes and a school in the area he grew up in. So I rang the press officer, who happened to be in the same room as Dwayne Holmes at the time, and did you play in that? And yes, I did. How did he find that out? And so I had this line that he played at Wembley in this Rugby League Cup final about 15 years before. And when he came on in the final, such was the nature of the game, I didn't get it in. I had mentioned it to my colleague, Paul Walker, who was doing the game. And he got it in. And he's doing the game on Saturday as well for viewers around the world. So you kind of look for deeper stuff that you might not normally go to on a Common or Garden Championship game, just because of the significance of it. And I think there's all kinds of Wembley stories that tend to come out and memories that tend to come out around this time. So they're things you tap into and they're big occasion experience.
Dan, what's the ultimate for you? I'm sure we're all a little bit different. Is it just a 4-3 thriller or is it extra time? Do you want red cards aplenty? What makes it the perfect game for a lead commentator at Wembley?
Nothing that I will be remembered for the wrong reason. I think, you're very hard pushed to get a thriller in this game, in the Championship playoff final, because it matters so much and you do get that sort of natural fear of being the one that makes the mistake that costs you. I mean, for a perfect game, I suppose, want it to be a contest all the way through. You want there to be the tension. You want there to be some flashes of quality. I recall talking about the fear factor. I recall doing Huddersfield Reading, which was my first main Sky channel. I've done a few in the glory days of 3D, which nobody remembers. There was a chance early on, and I can't recall now who it was for, possibly for Reading in the first 5 minutes. And everybody kind of, oh no, this is too open. We're going to have to just not take any risks here. I can't honestly recall anything else happening before the penalties.
It was awful. It was terrible.
And it was one of those occasions where you kind of delighted that you went to go and see a few of the Huddersfield players and spend a bit of time with them and talk to a few of the Reading guys, because suddenly you had actually something to say while there was nothing happening. So I was talking about Ali Al-Habsi's time as a fireman. Michael Heffler worked in a car dealership as a work experience and all this. And he was a number 10, would you believe, in his youngest days, which I find hard to envisage now. But yeah, so I had all that behind me. And I suppose that helped. And you want to have all of that so that at least if there's nothing happening on the pitch, you can alight on something reasonably interesting.
Yeah, you use the term flashes of quality there. So you're hoping for flashes of quality in the game. If we turn it towards the actual match, which player on each side would you sort of pick out as someone that might be able to provide that on Saturday? Who do you really particularly enjoy watching out these two sides?
Well, I've loved watching Harmer this season. I think he's just a fabulous character as much as anything. And there's something a little bit different about him. And he produces those moments. I mean, I've very rarely seen a game. I mean, it's not always that flash of inspiration. Sometimes it's a flash of aggression. Sometimes it's something that just livens things up. Yeah, I have really enjoyed watching him this season, possibly as much as anybody in the Championship. He can just produce moments that suddenly transform games. And I know there was a little bit of controversy about him getting the player of the year. But I think at the time of voting, and I should stress, I had no skin in this particular game. I didn't have a vote or anything, but probably at the time, this was all done in March, I think, hope I'm not giving away too much. And so therefore, you know, I probably would have gone for him at that time. And so, you know, maybe others staked a greater claim later towards the end of the season before it was announced, but he is one definitely. And I think what we've seen from Mayenda, I mean, just in the first leg in that situation. Now, I know, you know, Milan Anevike will kick himself probably for the rest of his life about that back pass. But then the amount he still had to do and the fact that he's such a young player, I mean, obviously an immense talent, that he was able to produce that amount of composure and keep his head in that way. He's clearly going to be a player that will have the eyes on him. There are plenty of others. I mean, there's lots of talented players out there. But if I was going to pick out one from each side, they would be the two.
Oh, look, we're going to let you get back to the beautiful bird song that is amidst your garden this morning. But before I let you go, come on, neck on the line. Who's going to win? Who's going to be playing Premier League football next season?
I have no idea.
Are you expecting it to go all the way? I mean, it feels like it's that time, maybe even penalties kind of game.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, there's not, I mean, penalties have been part of the story in the regular league games as well, not necessarily going well. Yeah, it does have the feel of there being nothing between them, really. And over the course of the season, Sheffield United clearly have been the better team, but over the course of the games, they were very, very, very fine margins indeed. So I do have the sense that we'll be there for the long haul, which at least means that there will be some drama. If I honestly had a view on it and had honestly decided in my mind who I thought was going to win, I would say so. But I can't honestly pick one out at this point.
All right. Well, that's a pretty good way to go into any game, I think. We really appreciate your time today, Dan. Enjoy the game on Saturday. And yeah, hopefully speak to you again soon.
Yeah, pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
That is Daniel Mann there. He will be commentating on Sheffield United versus Sunderland in the Championship playoff final live on Sky Sports this coming Saturday. All right then, chaps. So Sheffield United thump Bristol City in the semis. But as we keep saying, they've never, ever been promoted via the playoffs before. No team has failed more. This is their 10th attempt. They've lost Championship finals twice before, to Wolves in 03 and Burnley in 09. It's their first final since they lost the League One showpiece against Huddersfield on Pens in 2012. They've lost in all four playoff finals, three at Wembley, not scored in any of them. And yet, Sam, I feel like we all expect them to win here.
I think they go into it as slight favourites, but only slight, given the disparity between the two teams in the table and probably the depth of Sheffield United's squad potentially as well. I raised this on a different medium yesterday. I probably didn't articulate myself very well, but so bear with me.
Well, you've just used the words medium and articulate in the same sentence, so you're not doing too badly.
I think you have to put the fact that they've faltered at the final hurdle on multiple occasions into the mix. Maybe that's just the tension that the supporters will feel, and the players have to try and ignore that as best as they can and try and just play their natural game. The point I made yesterday was they had such a stroll to the final. It was very unlike their end to the season. Some really tight games where the pressure did get the better of Sheffield United. I'm talking about the defeats in the space of that week. You know, low margin games where they couldn't match the intensity and the power of the two promoted sides, and they faltered. So they're going to come under spells of pressure in this game. It's going to be tight. It's going to be cagey, and it's whether they can deal with it. And in essence, Sunderland have just been through a colossal challenge in that regard. Sheffield United won at a canter, didn't they, against Bristol City? So they haven't been, I suppose, tested hugely mentally in their semi-final. So that's one kind of question mark I have for them, because I think they faltered towards the tail end of the season. However, you know, I think pound for pound, you look at the depth, you look at the subs that can influence it, you look at the amount of match winners in Sheffield United's side. Yeah, marginal favourites, but, you know, Sunderland showed in that semi-final with a really concise game plan that they can be a match for anyone. And I expect, I don't know what Clarkie thinks, I'm sure we'll get onto it in a moment, I expect Sunderland to have a little bit more of a go and those attacking players probably to have a little bit more ball, which will make it even more of an even encounter.
14 points between them at the end of the regular season. That's the biggest gap between two Football League playoff finalists since 1989. Sheffield United looking to win at Wembley for the first time in 100 years since they beat Cardiff in the FA Cup final of 1925. You remember that one well, Clarke.
Of course.
I'm sure. Sunderland, I think our general consensus was they got a bit of luck, didn't they, to get through against Coventry. I guess they're looking to just continue riding that wave as they come into this one. Albeit, you know, they traded home wins, these teams, didn't they, in the regular season, so it's not like they're going to come into this as huge underdogs.
No, definitely not huge underdogs. No, just going back to Sam's point, it will be interesting to see who has more of the ball. So I genuinely think that both are slightly better when they're on the transition encounter. I don't think either really wants to be possession heavy. So that's something to consider, I think, ahead of the game. I suspect Sunderland will still let Sheffield United have more of it, but it could even be a 50-50 split. We'll have to see. My concern over Sunderland is that it's my end or nothing. That's the issue. Like, the other guys aren't delivering. They're not in form, are they?
Four goals in their last eight games.
Yeah, exactly. But if you go further back individually with guys like Patrick Roberts and Bellingham and Rigg and, you know, the guys on Enzo Lefebvre, they're not scoring any goals. They're just not. Mayenda is, but the others aren't. And so that is a slight concern. Where Sheffield United have a wide range of players that have all scored goals recently. They've got options on the bench. I mean, he rotated in the playoffs. You know, that was the luxury that Wilder had. So I think if the game's going to be one off the bench, Sheffield United will probably have a big advantage there. But yeah, it's what does Sheffield you do? Do they do what Kov did and you know, boom loads of crosses into the box and onto the head of Dan Ballard? If they've got any sense, they'll try not to do that, won't they? Because he's very dominant. But because they've got Kiefer Moore in there, more than likely anyway, then that might be a temptation. So there's loads of strands to this game. I just feel that it's going to be tight. I don't think there'll be very many goals. Both teams are very good without the ball. But I have to side with Sheffield United because I think they've got more good players and that their form, even though they did have some wobbles towards the end of the season, their form is still stronger than Sunderland's.
Yeah, my gut says that Regis Labrice will play the same side, given that they got through. They played the 4-4-2 against against Sheffield United in their victory this season with Mayenda and Isidore playing. The craving from the Sunderland fans is to get Enzo Lefebvre centrally, which I think would make sense in this game to give them more control, to give them an additional body in the midfield to garner that control of the game.
What, and then play Watson on the wing or something like that?
No, play Mundell wide left, who came
Mundell,
on.
Sorry, yeah. Mundell,
but the problem is, the big problem is that means leaving out one of the centre forwards because Roberts' form is terrible. He is so out of sorts. And watching the two semi-finals, the confidence of him is shot to pieces. But what he does do, quite a lot of work going back the other way, helping out the fullback. And I just think at Wembley, to play a centre forward, which it would have to be, Mayenda wide right, too much of a risky strategy. So my hunch is that he'll go with the same team. But absolutely, that's his one big decision because Mundell looks fresh, looks sharp, looks motivated. He was great early part of the season. And I think the Sunderland fans, and I think there's an inevitability that Enzo Lefebvre will end up being a number 10 predominantly throughout his career. At the moment, he's playing wide on the left-hand side. So it's absolutely that configuration of Sunderland's back line, which is going to be the fascinating aspect. And Ballard, I mean, he's going to have a good game defensively, but given the way he performed in that regard and also getting the goal, he could be vital at both ends again. I mean, he was faultless. He was 9 out of 10, wasn't he, across the two semi-finals.
Isn't it faultless 10 though, Sam?
Yeah, losing a mark for taking his shirt off and swinging it around his head. No, you can do whatever you like in that scenario. Maybe for the tape. He had the tape in on, didn't he?
Oh, well, as we say, they're both traded home wins in the regular season. Sunderland very familiar with Wembley and with playoffs. Been involved in the playoffs in 5 of the last 7 seasons, including this. This is their 6th visit to the new Wembley. Might go all the way, Clarkey. I mean, I say that. There hasn't been a draw between them since 1999, would you?
Oof. Oh, wow. I didn't know that. No, I didn't know that. Sam touched on it being 4-4-2. It could be 4-4-2 v 4-4-2, which is quite refreshing, isn't it? In a bid to get to the Premier League, where pretty much no one plays 4-4-2. But they do it in different ways. Sunderland are very much more of a standard 4-4-2 or 4-4-1-1, really, with the wingers sort of hugging the touchline, overlapping fullbacks, etc. But Sheffield United, for me, is more of a lopsided 4-4-2, where Burrows is your guy that goes on down the left, and it allows Harmer to sort of drift in, doesn't it, into that 10 role. And then on the other side, Choudhury tucks across. He doesn't get forward anywhere near as much. And it's more of a back three, really, with Peck and Vinicius in front. So it's the same shape on paper, but the way that they use it is very different. And that's something maybe for the listeners to sort of look out for at the weekend. I would say actually Sheffield United is a 3-2-2-3 or something like that, you know, at times. I think that's how it is. But yeah, it's going to be an interesting game, but I don't think it's going to be a goal fest. Do you? No, because they're both really good without the ball. These two coaches are not Muppets. They know exactly what they're doing. And for that reason, I just don't see it escalating out of hand.
All right. Well, it is 3:01 for the kickoff on that one. On Saturday, next today, we'll have a look ahead to the League One final. And that is on Sunday lunchtime. Charlton Athletic versus Leighton Orient. Nathan Jones an addict for drama slash the TV cameras, whilst Richie's well into the idea of being a championship manager. Charlton hoping to return to the second tier after a five-year absence. One thing that we can all pray for, Sam, is that this final won't be as dreadful as the two legs against Wickham.
Oh, God, yeah, that was up there with the worst in recent memory. And Leighton Orient and Stockport served up something completely contrasting. I thought that was a really good side. Would have been an excellent final, I think, those two. Really going for it across the two games. I think, yeah, contrasting styles here to a degree. I think probably Charlton slightly better in defence towards the tail end of the season. Orient probably slightly more goals in their armoury. And I think if you look at the front players right now, I think they've probably got more ways to hurt the addicts rather than the other way around. 51 goal involvements between their front three, the likely starting kind of Ajay, Kelman, Donnelly, obviously O'Neill, another on the other side. But you know, that's a really good return. Quite similar, Kelman and Charlton's main goal scorer, Godden, although Kelman just seems to have had a lease of life this season. He looks sharper and quicker than he's ever looked before. Played a lot of football where I thought he came to the ball too often. Now he can stretch opposition teams. He can sniff out an opportunity. He looks like an excellent centre forward all of a sudden. Charlton won these two games, didn't they, narrowly in the league.
90th minute goals in all of them.
Yeah.
They didn't score in the first 89 minutes of each game. They didn't score, Charlton. So, but yeah, they won both games.
Yeah, it's a bit hazy, the one at the Valley, but obviously the one at Brisbane Road's relatively recent. And goals from centre-halves, which I think is another thing to look at going into this game, because I don't think there's going to be much between them, but Jones and Gillespie have combined for 8, I think, which is a pretty good return from centre-halves. But I just hope that where Wickham didn't, Leighton Orient can trust their better footballers to get on the ball and show a little bit more control, a little bit more probing. And I'm sure they will. They like to counter, which I don't think they'll get the opportunity to do. So it'll be up to the likes of Brown, Clare, Donnelly to be able to prize Charlton open, who will sit in their shape and make it really hard for the O's to make opportunities. But yeah, finely balanced, not a great deal between them. Two excellent managers, slightly different styles, but incredibly animated and passionate. It's going to be good fun on the touchlines. And yeah, I mean, whoever gets through, really looking forward to seeing one of these teams battle out in a championship next season.
Been a long old wait for Leighton Orient, Clark. It'll be 10 days between the second leg of the semi and the final. Richie Wellens has taken them away for a bit of sun on their backs, a bit of golf, a couple of pints as well, I would have thought as well. Is that a good way to warm up for this, do you think? Because it's strange, isn't it? Because normally you go kind of Saturday, Tuesday throughout the season. It's quite a long gap to go between games. Could that be problematic in any way for Orient or for both teams?
You don't know. The different players deal with that in varying ways, don't they? I wouldn't blame, if I was a manager, I'd probably do something similar. I'd just take their mind off it a little bit, have a bit of a giggle, you know, get the group really sort of galvanized. As long as it went the night before, you know, it's fine, isn't it? So no, that would make sense to me. I'm assuming Charlton haven't done that. And Nathan Jones, as I know him, you know, he's so intense that I don't know how much he'll let the players switch off. He might have done. He might have done for the first sort of 48 hours, but ever since then, I bet there's been a real focus on what's going to happen. Sam touched on it there.
Well, their wives weren't even allowed to go out for a coffee, were they? Or go to a shop?
This is right.
Yeah, can't imagine they've been living it up in Dubai.
I can't see it.
A cloud of lonely.
Okay, yeah. Aerial power. Look at the highlights from both the games and for Leighton Orient and the chances Stockport had from corners and free kicks were abundant. You know, they probably should have scored 5 goals from set pieces. Charlton have one of the best records in the division at scoring from set pieces, so it wouldn't surprise me at all if that's how this one get settled. Yeah, it's going to be, yeah, Orient will play the football, I think, in the final, which Charlton will be, you know, a bit more direct, I imagine. Not as direct as they were against Wickham. I think that one, kind of, they boomed it because the other one booms it in a way. I felt that was just a bad matchup in terms of a watch. I think Charlton can play and Leighton Orient maybe will
will ensure that they do. But, you know, Leighton Orient will go longer as well at times, won't they? So, yeah, it's a hard one to call this, but I'd probably just side with Charlton because of that set-piece threat, because of Godden. I really like Godden. I think he's just one of those sniffers. It's like, give him a chance in a big game. Just, he almost always delivers. So that could be the difference for me.
Yeah, I think we've spoken about it a lot the last few weeks, you know, those really important parts of the jigsaw for Charlton, getting back fit ahead of the playoffs. The one question mark for me in comparison to Leighton Orient and that fluid kind of front line that I've already spoken about is who plays at number 10 for Charlton. I think they've had three different players play it, Berry, Anderson and Gilbert, across the last three or four games, which I think Berry's just toiling a little bit, probably because of that injury late in the day. And I think...
I like Anderson. I think Anderson's got something about him.
Yeah, I don't...
I think Berry's a better footballer.
Mm.
Anderson's finished the season okay, from what I've seen.
Yeah, he scored, obviously, in that game you were at, and he had a decent impact in the first leg of the semi-final. But I think that could play a part here, because, you know, going back to that goal power... and obviously it gets levelled out a little bit by the physical threat and the set-piece threat of Charlton. But I just think, you know, that's been a little bit of a hindrance last few weeks. Maybe made up for a little bit because Small's back, got the minutes in the semi-final, and I'm sure he'll be a starter on the right-hand side. But yeah, I mean, like the other two we're going to discuss, and we have discussed already, it's fine margins between these two.
Boys, I've got something for you before we move on. This is only the third All-London playoff final.
Wow.
And can you remember the last two? And they're not that long ago. Only ever been two London derbies in the playoff final. A little tester for you.
Well, I'll tell you what, have a think, Sam. We'll come back to that at the end of the show.
Not too long ago, Clarky, yeah?
Nope. Both this century.
That's going to wind me up. Okay. All right. We'll come back to that. Listen, you have some thinking time as well. And Adrian could put us out of our misery at the end of the pod. Next today, though, let's have a look at the League Two final. Well, this is awkward. Two of Sam's mates squaring off in the League Two playoff final as Johnny Jackson's Wimbledon take on Matt Sadler's Saddlers. Walsall, that is. Wimbledon seem to have rediscovered their winning habit at just the right time, don't they? Sam, you're on duty for both legs of their semi-finals. Both 1-0 against Notts. Same score they beat Grimsby by on the last day of the season. There'll be 10,000 plus Wombles making the shorter trip to Wembley than it will be for Walsall. First time in a playoff final since 2016. Do you think that they got their groove back in that semi against Notts?
Got one for Clarkey. Sorry, mate. Brentford Fulham.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
2020. That one. Yeah.
Did they get their groove back? Yeah, I think across the last three games, a true encapsulation of what they've been for the majority of the season and when they're at their best, you know, defensively, maybe. A little bit rode their luck in the first leg at Meadow Lane, certainly rode their luck. There was three or four really presentable opportunities for Conor Grant in particular. But yeah, across the two legs, nobody who watched that second leg could say that the wrong team are going to be turning out at Wembley next Monday. They were far superior. Kai didn't half help not having Jatta and McGoldrick not available for Notts County. I think if you take the two biggest goal threats out of any side in any football team, it has an effect. And, you know, I don't think the Notts County players really turned up in their absence. They could have done a little bit better. Maybe the coach could have been a little bit more proactive with one or two changes or one or two selections that he went with. But no, Wimbledon were fantastic. Lewis was colossal. And I think going ahead to look forward to the final, the wingbacks, Nerville, Wimbledon's player of the year, getting that goal. Two teams that play similar systems, albeit Walsall have been playing with this box midfield latterly in the season, which is a really clever change from Matt Sadler, which has put a little bit of life into their side again. But Wimbledon's threat through Tilly and Nerville in comparison to what will probably be Gordon and the Simwe for Walsall, a bit contrasting. You know, there's more goals, there's more creativity in the Wimbledon lads, and that just shows you the system's being deployed and played slightly differently. They had Barrett playing right wing back for Walsall, I think had 8 assists or something before he's had to miss a little bit of football. So they did have that there, but currently it's Wimbledon that probably have the more strength there. But two very similar outfits, you know, Walsall really free scoring early part of the season. They've dried up a little bit in that regard, and their strong suit, as Wimbledon's is, is in defence, in their goalkeeper, in their structure, in their work ethic, especially at the top end of the pitch, the way they hunt the ball. So it's going to be a long day, I would suggest. There's probably not going to be too many chances. And of all the three, this is the one that I would tip to certainly go over 90 minutes.
So tell us about that second leg, Adrian. You were at the Poundland Bescot Stadium on Friday night. We were all wondering whether Walsall were going to blow up, given how they have blown up in the entirety of the second half of the season. So give them some praise for not doing that and tell us what kind of state they come into this game.
No, I was impressed with them. Yeah, they didn't look like blowing up. I mean, Chesterfield had all of the ball. They had so much of the ball, Chesterfield, but Walsall were comfortable letting them have it, and they very rarely got pulled out of position. What struck me was how hard they worked in central midfield, with Sturck in particular, was very good. It was the two at the top, the two attacking midfielders, particularly George Hall, I thought had a terrific game on the left side of that box. Jealous to the right. They're at you quick. So they suck you in. They're a little bit like Crystal Palace, who play a very similar system. So Palace against City, we saw it in the cup final, sit in, and then bang, they go in. They might go into Matt, or they'll play through the thirds, and they'll get those two players that I just mentioned, the two number 10s, on it, and they don't mess around. They're at you very, very quickly. So yeah, I was impressed with the shape. I thought the wing backs were good, actually. Gordon and Asimwe over the two legs. Yeah, maybe don't have as much end product over the course of the season as Wimbledon's, but you know, that they'll be good battles, make no mistake, because I don't think they're bad players at all. I think they're good. So yeah, no, they handled the occasion very well, Walsall. Now, I never felt that Chesterfield were going to come back into it, to be honest. And of course, Sam's mate, Uncle Albert Adoma, off the bench. I mean, two fantastic assists. Absolutely brilliant. So yeah, I wouldn't expect him to start at Wembley, but I would absolutely guarantee you he's coming on at some point, whether Walsall are in front or behind, because that was some impact that he made. So yeah, Walsall were really good. But I mean, seeing both teams, obviously I was at the Notts County one with Sam, the first leg. The eye test still tells me that Wimbledon are a slightly better team, slightly more rounded maybe. I think Wimbledon can beat you in maybe more different ways. I think they'll have more of the ball, Wimbledon, than Walsall here. And I liked the way that Wimbledon moved the ball. I thought they created some lovely, lovely moves. So I do think it could go to extra time. But if I had to stick my head on the line, it would be the Dons to prevail.
Yeah, I'm not just saying it because they're my mates, but brilliant turnarounds end of the season. I mean, you know, Wimbledon having that shootout at Grimsby and considering what Matt Sadler's been through, incredible to get them refocused. I think for those two games against Chesterfield, and also credit for him, I touched on it a moment ago, but changing the shape, I think it was the Newport game where he did it and went with the two tens. That's proved really important. And I think Chang and Hall, those two have not been kind of readily available for him throughout the season. And they were kind of in deputy, but I think having those two available and putting the trust in them, I think that's been that kind of catalyst for the turnaround, getting the legs in there, and probably just taking some of the other guys out of the firing line when the pressure has ramped up. But, you know, I could say very similar about Wimbledon. You know, they were really out of form going into that Grimsby game. So to get the victory there, and then produce the level of performance they did in the semi-final has to be admired. So it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be fascinating how it goes. And a nice little subplot, Matty Stevens and Jamil Matt, they fired Forest Green to promotion, didn't they, a few years ago? They're going to be at opposite ends of the pitch, the probably most two obvious chances of either side.
Interesting.
Getting the opening goal.
So that is Monday for that one. It's the first time that Walsall are playing in a playoff final in an awful long time, 2001 to be precise. They beat Reading that day. Don Goodman was amongst the goal scorers for the Sabres.
Goodness, yeah, I've heard of him. Yeah. Sam, can I ask you, in terms of the two characters of Sadler and Johnny Jackson, who do you think will sort of be the more nervous? Are they nervous characters? Are they calm, laid back? Tell us a little bit more about the pair of them from what you know.
I would say Johnny's like the most laid back man you'll ever find, but you know, I think it has been affecting him the last year. I think he knew coming out of Charlton just how paramount it was to get this one right.
So I think he's put enormous pressure on himself. And Sads, I think, yeah, he's incredibly driven. I think that's the first thing to say about him, and focused as he was as a player. And I think both of them similarities in that they were written off at times, you know, as players probably. And Jacko went and became club legend at Charlton, then coach, then manager. We'll go down in folklore there. And Sads, I think the early part of maybe his 20s or his mid-20s, lost his way a little bit in terms of the game time he was getting. He went and became a massive part of Shrewsbury's rise, got to Wembley on a couple of occasions, captain clubs like Jacko. So I think there are the similarities between the two. And I think like all the guys that come out of the game, certainly my friends, the ones that succeed are the ones that want to put the hours in. And those two are very similar. You know, they are living and breathing it. And, you know, that's not always the case. People listening will probably think that's always the way, but it's not. It's the ones that become a success are the ones that take it ultimately seriously, the ones that are thinking about it every minute of the day. And those two are absolutely that. So, yeah, it's going to be a lovely day, I think, for them. And they've been under it this season. They've really been under pressure, and that's the modern game, which we know, the three of us. Some of it, I think, has been a little bit less than tasteful, but it's the modern world, and they've had to, yeah, suffer a few body blows, I think, towards the tail end of the season. So to refocus, and again, not just because they're my mates, but, you know, I'm immensely proud of them being able to turn around what was a really sticky situation for both.
Yeah, two decent lads, aren't they? So you've got Fulham Brentford. There's one more to get on the London Derby. Believe it or not, this is only the second London v West Midlands playoff final. The only other one was in the Championship. So you got till the end of the pod to think about that.
So I've got to get another London Derby.
No, a London v West Midlands Derby.
And we're still one London Derby short.
You're one more London Derby short. Yeah. And I need a London v West Midlands derby in the playoff final. It only ever happened once.
Oh, really?
And it happened in the Championship.
Oh, I've got that, yeah.
Go on.
Villa Fulham?
Yes, well played.
All right, well, we will finish up with the final London playoff final derby. But next today, let's talk a little bit of managerial news. And not so much news as olds, but stuff that's happened since our last show. Hull City have sacked Ruben Selles after 6 months in charge. He only replaced Tim Walter when he signed a 2.5-year deal in September. Helped them eventually avoid relegation to League One on the final day of the season. Second season in a row, Hull have fired their manager at the end of the campaign after Liam Rossini's exit last term. The owner, Ako Nilachai, said, "Ruben is a fantastic guy and a good coach, but at the end of the day, we have to be a team together and trust each other. And if we don't have full trust, then I don't think it can last. We're happy we stayed in the league, but I'm not happy about the general picture." Interesting to see Sam Miron Muzlic is odds on favourite to get the gig. I mean, whoever it is, you want to make sure that you're going to get paid the right amount of compensation when you inevitably get biffed after 6 months.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, I've seen some comparisons in various articles to Hull being the Watford of the North all of a sudden. I can't believe that decision, to be honest. Granted, I haven't had much time to do too much digging today or yesterday, but I mean, when he took that gig on, they were done and dusted. And I think there's a real lack of kind of potency in that squad. The injury did them no favours whatsoever, having lost Louis Barry, being able to prize him up there. Bellumi, I think Liam Miller, me and Clarkey spoke about those two wire players who looked like they were going to be the creators for Hull, so he didn't have them this season. And going in towards the tail end with Joseph and Gelhart, I think Burstow, Casey Palmer, you know, not people that I would bank on getting you the goals to get you out of the predicament. So to find a way, you know, I thought he deserved credit, Sellers. So I can't believe that looking for another manager, same sentiment really. I was probably less surprised with Rossini, because given the squad that he had to attack the back end of last season, despite it still being the wrong decision, I'm even more surprised with this one. So who knows which way they turn next? Need to make them more competitive in the forward positions. But yeah, you're a brave manager, I think, to take this role. Oh, I've forgotten about Tim Walter. That was a bit of a disaster. Granted, early part of the season, good watch. Did enjoy them on occasion, but far too open and certainly a lack of defensive nous within his armoury.
Worth the risk for Miron Muzlic, do you think, Clarkey?
I don't think I'd be in a hurry to take that job, if I'm honest. You know, I think he's got well-respected down there in Plymouth, isn't he? I wouldn't want to work for the Hull owner, if I'm honest, because his judgment is shocking. I'm completely in agreement with Sam. This is a really big mistake, I think. Just as Liam Rossini was obviously a mistake. I'm sure he'd concede that now. But yeah, Tim Valter was a mistake. Terrible style shift, way too chaotic. And then I think Sellers did a brilliant job. You know, he obviously has had to shut up shop defensively, which he did. Didn't really have loads of natural goal scorers in his team, did he? Or his squad. Yet they still got over the line and stayed up. So for me, Sellers absolutely deserves a pre-season to have a rebuild where I am convinced he would have produced some much, much better football. So, yeah, big mistake. I've heard a few whispers that Selesh could rock up at Cardiff. So let's see if that one comes in.
Red hot news on the group chat. Sam reckons he's got the other London one. Go on then.
Go.
Crystal Palace 1, West Ham 0 at the Millennium.
It's Palace West Ham, mate. Yeah, that is the one. Well played, sir.
Neil Shipley.
It was a good little tester, though, for you, wasn't it?
It was, mate. I had to write all the London clubs down.
Test that I failed, that's for sure. All right, Daryl Clark back at Bristol Rovers replaces Inigo Calderon. Previously had 4 years there, during which time he brought them back to the EFL, and then they got all the way up to League One. This feels like an admission, Adrian, to me, that they made a bad mistake in going for somebody completely unproven, and they thought, right, what are the most trusty pair of fans that we've got access to? And it turned out they were Daryl Clark's.
Yeah, completely. He's popular, isn't he, there? And it gets the fans back on side, because the fans aren't loving the owners, are they? There's a definite disconnect there. And it's a club in a bit of turmoil. It makes complete sense to me. They're just taking a bit of heat off of themselves here, the ownership of Bristol Rovers, and going with a popular choice. And actually, Daryl Clark, they've got someone who's got broad enough shoulders to sort of handle it and to take on maybe a bit of extra responsibility around the recruitment as well, because that's been a big old issue at Bristol Rovers, where, you know, it hasn't worked out very well with recruitment. Was it George Friend that was there and he got biffed off after the January window? I think Clark might just take a bit more ownership over the whole thing, and that's probably for the best.
Sam, you're not having me putting Mark Hughes staying at Carlisle in the running order here, are you? Because once you're out of the EFL, you're dead to this podcast. I did think it was worth some comment, though, because, I mean, it's Mark Hughes, and he's going to be managing in the National League. He says he's thrilled to be staying at the club. What do you make of it? Have they weighed him in substantially, or is he just bloody love football?
Probably the latter, isn't it? It's got to be the latter. Yeah, I mean, we don't know his personal circumstances and, what the commitment's going to look like. But, I mean, it is strange, given that, you know, he was out of the game or certainly didn't have a gig in the EFL until taking that Bradford one, which I think on the face of it was a big surprise. But in the majority of what I saw, I was quite impressed what he did at Bradford, albeit they couldn't make it into the playoff final ultimately. So I was surprised to see him pitch up at Carlisle. Again, I think they've chucked quite a bit of money at it already. Certainly there's been a big overhaul of the squad, a lot of new players coming in. I expect them to be really competitive. I don't know how much, I've never been in the position, but I don't know how much previous experience of the National League would really help, or whether his experience of the game and his knowledge will be enough to make them competitive. It's a difficult league to get out of, but I think given that the stability seems to be there off the pitch, which has obviously not always been the case, I expect them to put together a competitive squad and be in the reckoning. Whether they can do it the first time of asking is anybody's guess. But yeah, I think he has to be admired, doesn't he, above anything else? You know, any manager who's worked at the highest level, played at the highest level, to be getting their hands dirty towards the tail end of his managerial career is to be applauded.
Yeah. I reckon they might win the title. I don't think it's the strongest National League next year. I think they're going to smash it.
All right. Well, that's a prediction of sorts. And so that leads us nicely into our predictions for this time around. Not a vintage week last week, albeit Sam did get one perfect score. So he got 3 points. Adrian, just the one, and me, absolutely nothing. So yeah, this is a big week for me. But luckily for the finals, any correct score is worth 50 points. So I do have a chance of overhauling things. Shall we go? Let's start with League Two first. We'll build our way up to the Championship. Walsall versus Wimbledon then. I think we've said that all these are going to be tight, low-scoring affairs. Let's see if that's reflected in our predictions. What do you think, Adrian? You can go first on the League Two final.
Oh, also, is this 90 minutes?
90 or, minutes, yeah.
90
we did,
minutes.
We did that for the semi, so let's be consistent.
Okay, Walsall, nil, Wimbledon won.
Okay, Sam?
For the purposes of today's podcast, I'm going to call it a Dan Man. I'm going to Dan Man you, 0-0.
I will say 1-2 to Wimbledon. I think there'll be goals. Leighton Orient versus Charlton, what do you reckon, Sam?
Well, this is the one I'm going to have a bit of a go at. I will give you Leighton Orient 2, Charlton 1.
Okay. Interesting. I'm going to go for 1-1 and then some drama in extra time. What do you reckon, Clarky?
Yeah, I wanted the 1-1. Wanted it bad. Let's flip it. Let's just go. I'll go 2-1 Charlton. 90th minute again.
Yeah, imagine.
Nathan Jones on his knees.
Sheffield United, Sunderland. I think that this is going to be, let's say, 2-0 to Sheffield United. I'm feeling bold. What about you, Adrian?
I liked that. Yeah, I'm going to go 1-0 Sheffield.
Okay. Sam, is it going to be a clean sweep for the Blades?
It is. I'll take the 1-1. Extra time.
Okay, fine. Right, before we go, let me remind you again of this offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can now get 50% back up to £35 and 10 free spins. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet, up to £35, minimum three bets, plus 10 free online casino spins at Quin Casino. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, plus 10 free spins, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. 18 plus and for new UK customers only. Visit gambleaware.org for information on responsible gambling. Tweet of the week to finish then. It comes from Levi Amanchi of Walsall, who is quote tweeting the official account, which initially said, missing Levi's GPS vest. Levi scored the winner, dot, 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 but his shirt and GPS vest have gone walkies. If you pick them up by mistake, drop us a line, to which Levi quote tweeted with two laughing faced emojis. Anyone fancy giving my shirt and GPS vest, please, dot, 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 and another laughing emoji. And the thing about this, Sam, and this happened a couple years ago with Lyle Taylor when Forest went at Bristol City in stoppage time on their way to their triumphant promotion back to the Premier League, where they're currently thriving. A GPS vest, by its very nature, should be quite easy to find, should it not? Is that not the point of them? Is there not some way of tracking where it is?
I can never find my AirPods, mate. That's end of my life. I'm just thinking, you don't lose your shirt or your GPS unless you've given it away.
Yeah.
So Levi has made a rick here, hasn't he? Because you can keep hold of your shirt despite how many people are surrounding you and asking for items of your clothing. If you don't want to give anything away, you can walk back into that dressing room fully changed. So fully changed, fully dressed. So he is...
hasn't been ripped off him, is it? It hasn't been ripped off him.
So he's just trying to cover his tracks here and sort his analyst out, isn't he?
Chris WFC Clark in the reply says that'll be sellotaped in someone's Ford Escort by now. There's not a whole lot of optimism amongst the replies that this is going to be returned.
Would you, if you were a Walsall fan, would you actually give it back, or would you just play dumb here? I'd like to think I'm a really quite an honest person. You know, I'm not nasty, but I think I'd probably keep it. I'd just keep my head down and say, no, fine, just keep it. I mean, there's no chance of me getting this back, is there?
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought so. I mean, I'd get it straight on eBay, personally.
The effective delay, it's over.
Really well, that off was serious, says Ed Dawes. So he's obviously gone through the whole rig. I mean, yeah, there's going to be footage somewhere, isn't there? Actually, Clark, you were at Walsall on Friday night. Did you get your bag searched on the way out?
No one's checked me on the way out, but I did stay in my seat, unlike almost everybody else who was out there on the pitch. So, I don't know. He's got no chance of getting it back, has he? But, like, are they that valuable? Seriously, like, how much are they worth? Like, for it to sort of almost be put out there that we need this back. Like, they can't cost that much, can they?
Anywhere between 65 quid and 250 after a cursory Google. So, yeah, if it's one of the cheaper ones, maybe not. Right. All right. That's where we'll leave it for today. Yeah, if you're off to a playoff final, do try and enjoy it, albeit there's only one way you really can. We'll be back next week to break them all down in our final show of the season. Join us for that if you can. Until then, thanks to Daniel Mann for joining us. Remember, you can watch all three EFL playoff finals live on Sky Sports here in the UK. Thanks to Adrian and Sam as well for their expertise as ever. We'll catch up with you again soon. Bye for now.